He had so much good information this week that he needed to wait till Friday. He's been gathering all week. Tim Hasselbeck, our man, we are ready, and I hope he's ready, because the buildup for this hit this week, having to wait till Friday, it's tough, but we're here. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, now our man Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, what's going on?
What's up? How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. There's
a lot of buildup. By the way, that was a nice little setup. Yeah, I hope you're off to a start to your
day. That you may have been up for like five hours. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you probably haven't started your day at 11, but, you know, whatever. You get the gist of it.
Hey, it was good. I figured you were, you know, maybe setting lineups for this weekend or something.
That's during the break.
Okay.
I want
to go easy on the arms, man. Go easy on the arms.
I know. We just talked to Jared Parker. So I'm definitely going to keep that in mind for sure. Got to go at 10. Got to go easy on the arms. So speaking of going easy, we've been talking about this week. There's a lot to do of, you know, carries and workload. And look, that is very prevalent in sports today, right? We kind of have a new mindset about preserving professional athletes. But I want Coach Hasselbeck to answer this, because I when we talked about it this week, and now there's, you know, a story out there that the Titans are considering a Derrick Henry extension, but your guy Bill Barnwell has already put out an article, you know, is Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey and Ezekiel, are all these guys going to bounce back and be those backs that we've seen in the past, or, you know, are they starting to be on the back end of their career and everything else, so with injuries and mm-hmm. workload, how do you handle this? Because here's the tough spot that Mike Vrabel's in, and this is why I'm asking Coach Hasselbeck. How do you limit Derrick Henry when he's your best option? And, oh, by the way, the only way Derrick Henry can get paid as an athlete and you keep him happy is to give him the workload, right? Mm-hmm. If he's not as valuable, if he has 280 carries, he can't demand – big money. He can't demand certain things. So how do you handle that dynamic?
Yeah, so here's how I would handle this is, you know, I would really appeal and convince the player, because I think it's the right thing for the team and for the player to be playing his best football later in the year when it matters the most, right? You know, there's always this talk about when you train for a season – like, you shouldn't peak at the start of training camp. That's not the point. The point is, you know, to try to peak when the games matter the most. So, you know, I think as it relates to that on a season-long perspective, what you would want is you would want Derrick Henry to not be worn out when you're playing the most critical games, whether it's, you know, at the end of the regular season because it's seeding or winning your division and postseason. You want him feeling great then. So with that in mind, you know, like the idea that, like, hey, you know, weeks 1 through 8, he needs to, you know, have 27 touches a game. Like, I don't think you want to do that. I really don't. Now you're trying to win the games, and maybe some games he, you know, he is going to have 27 touches. And then, you know, other games, you know, it's like, well, you know what, he had 14. And we're okay with that. If you can, you know, if it's not costing you wins and losses. So I think there's that aspect of a season and management in a season. From the perspective of the career, I just think the gloves are off. Like, the running back position is a, you know, there's only so much tread on the tire position, and you know, for lack of a better way to put it, you run them into the ground and then you get new tires. You know, I mean, it's just, that's what you do.
Right, but that's two different philosophies. So that's what I'm saying.
But I think no. But I think this, I think on a season-long perspective, you can say, look, we're going to get to whatever the number is, 300 and something carries. Like, we're going to get there. Okay. But it's going to look more like a J curve than, you know, just steady Eddie all the way through the season with the number of touches and stuff. Okay.
Okay.
But you're going to get to the number. you're going to get to the 300 plus wear and tear number. And so I think in doing that, you basically operate with the understanding of, look, there's a shelf life to the position. And so what I'm saying to you is how I would handle it in the season is this, and then how I would handle it in terms of the front office meetings, I would say, let us, like, I'm fine being wrong if he had four more good years in him. Like, I'm fine if he ends up being the next Adrian Peterson and we let him out the door. I'm okay doing that. Like, that's the position I would take.
Okay.
On that.
Tim, so, you're the coach of the Colts. Okay, so he's going into his third year. So that means the prime. I mean, he's not even in the prime, or maybe he is, as a running back. Going into his third year, Jonathan Taylor is in the Titans division. He had 332 carries last year for over 1,800 yards, 18 touchdowns. And, oh, by the way, throwing his receptions and his receiving yards, he has over 2,000 total yards and 20 touchdowns. Are you scaling back in year three? Are you doing the same workload? Are you doing more?
Yeah. No. So what I'm doing is he's my workhorse. Plain and simple. They just signed Philip Lindsay too, right? So, like, you know, he'll have a role.
But what is he?
But listen, here's the deal. He's the workhorse, okay? So whatever the number is, 330, 350, 360, 310, like whatever the number is, I'm running him into the ground, okay? Now, again, I don't want him having, 27 touches, per game through the first half of the season. I don't want that. I'm fine with him touching it 18 times or less.
What if you can't win that way?
Yeah, I think you can. Like, listen, go look at it. I mean, the Titans have won games. It's not like the Titans don't win games when Derrick Henry rushes it, 17 times. Like, they still can win games. But what I'm saying is I'm just aware of it. But, like what I'm doing, like Jonathan Taylor, like, he's going to get over 300 and something carries for me, over 300 and probably 50, 60 touches. Like, I'm going to do that. And then you know what else is going to happen? His deal's going to be up, and I'm not signing him to a long-term deal. I'm not doing it. And he's an amazing player, and he's going to have more good years in front of him. But I don't want to be saddled with the contract of a running back who had a Liz Frank and then had a knee and then had a I'm not getting in that game.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, and Tim, in a bigger sense, we've tried to tackle that issue, and I noticed what's the first thing I'm seeing on the NFL page on ESPN.com? Are McCaffrey, Henry, Kamara, Elliott done as star running backs? Like, this is the way of life in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Can you have a bounce back after a certain amount of time? There seem to be a lot of questions on Derrick Henry. And then on top of that, you have a total redefinition of roles in the passing game. So look at that angle of it. How, just specifically with Treylon Burks, there's a lot on his shoulders here, and he's starting from scratch. You've got another player in Robert Woods who's coming off a major injury that you're going to be counting on. That seems like a lot that has to come together here.
Completely agree. Loved the Robert Woods signing at the time, because it's like, wow, like, the guy's just, I think it helps the passing game, like, plain and simple, an established receiver. The injury stinks, but because of what we've seen guys do with ACLs, like, you think, you know what, like, I think we'll be okay. And at the time, you're thinking AJ Brown is here, and it's like, I like this combo way more than than the Julio Jones combo, the year prior. But now you add the newness of him coming off of an injury, and now you add a first-round wide receiver. And I think I've mentioned this to you before. And AJ Brown he's a number one receiver. Treylon Burks, for all the comparisons to AJ Brown, and that's fantastic. And I mean, I even give you this perspective. I maybe shared this with you. My brother was at the combine. He actually called me from the combine. It's kind of out of character for him. He called me at the combine, and he's like, there's this receiver here from Arkansas. I love this guy. And so, he might be amazing. he might be absolutely amazing. For my brother at the combine to single him out as somebody that he thought was super impressive. Like, this guy could be incredible. But the hit rate for first-round wide receivers, meaning, like, the first-round wide receiver gets to a second contract, is essentially, it's the worst position in terms of hit rate that exists. It's, like,
really?
Under 30%. I think it's 27%, yes. And so the hit, now the best is offensive line. In fact, like, interior offensive line, center and guard. But the hit rate for wide receivers is 27%.
And these are wide receivers drafted, period?
In the first round. So here's the threshold.
Okay.
Wide receivers drafted in the first round that get a second contract with the team that drafted them.
With the team that drafted them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so listen, is it a perfect formula? No. But is it a really good formula to figure out, you know, was he Kevin White or was he Megatron? Yeah, it is. Like, it's a good formula to figure that out.
Okay, and this goes back how many years now?
It goes back, I'd have to look at it. Somebody sent it to me, but it's a 15, 20-year study.
Okay, so that to me is that's an interesting part of it, because I think a lot of people are hopeful that receivers are being taught better coming through now. I don't know if that's the case. These are just theories that are thrown there. That might be easier to get NFL-ready wide receivers now as opposed to 10 years ago, but it's still, like you point out, the numbers are the numbers.
Well, and so, like, you know, think of, you know, Jamar Chase. So everyone's like, okay, well, look at that. And you just look at some of these young receivers that have kind of burst onto the scene. Justin Jefferson, like, you name it. These young guys have come in, and it's been like, wow, these young guys are really great. But that's such a tiny sample size that we just start looking at, like, the last 3 years, and it's like, hey, it worked out. And look, maybe the theory is, look, all these 7-on-7 leagues, guys are coming into the league more ready to be pass catchers. Maybe true. But if you look at the, you know, a bigger data sample, the reality is that first-round wide receivers get missed on a lot. So, look, I hope the Titans hit on Treylon Burks. Every highlight you watch, you're like, man, this dude's going to be a really, really good player. But it's unlikely. That's the best way I can put it. It is unlikely that he will be as good as A.J. Brown. It just is. So, so Willie, I think you're on it in terms of, okay, running back getting older, got a guy coming off an ACL, got a receiver that, you know, it's unlikely that he's going to be as good as the guy that he's replacing. The quarterback is already under fire. Offensive line wasn't a good pass blocking offensive line a year ago. Like, there are a lot of things that have to come together. I agree.
Concern for sure. I'd love to see, Tim, a study on whether the trend has gone up, stayed the same in the last, say, 5 years, as we talked about this development of the 7-on-7 and stuff like that. That's a really fascinating stat there. But I want to ask you one more before we let you go. We have had some fun with you over the years. Your experience in NFL Europe, you had a good experience, right? It helped you. So give us objective.
Help me.
So give us your objective view of how the USFL is going here. I honestly haven't watched it that much. There's so much going on for me. I just haven't had a chance. I'm rooting for it. Of course, it pulls at my heartstrings because I did watch the original USFL a lot as a kid, is it serving its purpose? Can it survive?
Yeah, so I think it's probably too early to tell if it's serving its purpose. You know, I actually turned some on the other day. I think there were replays. You know, and it wasn't, I mean, just being real, like, you know, empty stadiums, not a ton of energy. Like, did it feel, did it feel like, wow, this is about to hit? No, it didn't feel that way. And I can tell you my experience in NFL Europe was, you know, we'd play in Frankfurt and there'd be 45,000 people there. You know, we'd play in Barcelona and there might be, you know, 5,000 people there. And so, you know, it really varied city by city. And I think with it being year one, you know, all the games being played in one spot, they're not necessarily, you know, the ability for a city to, you know, try to connect, or a team to connect with the city that they're in, because that can go a long way. I mean, look at, like, for example, and I know it's not apples to apples here, but, like, look at the way the Sounds, you know, try to reach the community here in Nashville. Well, like, that's got to be an important component of it for, you know, for any of these teams
you know, in their cities when they are operating in their cities. So, and I think there's two separate factors. The idea that, like, hey, is this going to help a player, you know, achieve his dream of playing in the NFL? Like, yes, because your other option is not playing. Like, so, and who, I don't know that it's going to be a quarterback or a running back or whatever it may be, but like, look, Kurt Warner, Brad Johnson, you know, those guys won, you know, are Super Bowl, you know, are in the Super Bowl as quarterback, Jake Delhomme, like all those guys. So I can't tell you that Kyle Sloter is going to end up, you know, doing that, but at least it's giving him, you know, it's keeping the dream alive for it. And I think that, you know, that will help it survive, but I think ultimately it's going to be how the businesses get managed and how they engage in their communities that really, you know, tell the tale of whether or not, you know, it's going to work.
Tim, if you want to come this weekend and support Tidal Wave Blue, I'll get your gate fee, you know.
Hey, listen.
I'll take care
of your
gate
fee.
Not,
I got to get used to Tidal Wave Blue. It doesn't roll off the tongue the way Smyrna Braves.
I know. Well, we've got two Tidal Wave tenure teams, so we're blue.
What are you switching the name to next year?
We've had it this way for a good while. There's two.
Yeah,
Tidal
Wave tenure. So think of the revenue. Think of the revenue you're leaving on the table by doing that.
I'll take care of your gate fees. Okay, I've got that kind of pull. You just let me know if you're coming.
Hey, listen. We're going down to Alabama to play.
Really?
Weekend, you know, think that's going to go. You know what we're going to do? We're going to drive to Alabama to play a team
from Smyrna
that lives 10 minutes away.
Yeah, exactly. Get used to it. It's going to happen.
How you guys feel about that?
Yep.
Let's just remain for real.
It was funny, Tim, because just to show you, this is not a new thing. I went to your brother. I didn't have a whole lot of contact with Matt when he was playing with the Titans, but his daughter was about the same age as my daughter, and we had a tournament in White House, Tennessee. That's not that far, right? That's a little bit of a drive.
No.
But his daughter was playing for the same club as my daughter. I was like, why? He was like, why did we have to go to White House to play those games? We could have just played right here. So I was like, this is how it goes.
Why drive 10 minutes when you can drive 2 hours?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Oh, good stuff. Tim, good luck in Bama. Roll Tide, roll. And we'll talk next week.
All right, see you, fellas.
Maybe we'll ask you about, if you could, look into the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher feud while you're down there.
You know what? I'll go ask little Mickey if he remembers slapping your knee.
That. And let's report back next week.
Okay. All right.
See you later. Tim Hasselbeck, he's a gem. Love talking to him. All right, tell everybody about Loan Pronto.
All right, let's talk Loan Pronto. Even if you've thought of moving, you probably haven't gotten very far once you start looking around at the prices of new homes right now. We see cranes going up. We see people moving to our listening area all the time. So it's not a great market right now if you're looking to upgrade and move to a different, bigger, better house, whatever that is in your mind. Not a lot of inventory, prices crazy, rates moving up. So this is what Loan Pronto has in store for you as maybe a better idea. Let them refinance your current home and turn the home equity you have into cash and then reinvest in your home, transforming your house with a new kitchen, new bathroom, outdoor living space, home office, whatever it is that you have in mind that you're looking for. Loan Pronto can help you unlock the equity you have, and then do some amazing things, turn your home into your dream home, and never have to move. So call Loan Pronto and ask about their home improvement refi. It's a fast and easy process, and it can get you thousands of dollars out of home equity to reinvest. So call Loan Pronto right now. Skip your next house payment in the process. 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780, or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS, 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
Don't forget Sounds Baseball tonight, 94-9. Game 4 of the 6-game homestand against the Louisville Bats. Pregame coverage begins at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 is presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Spirited Hive. Back here on the DDC. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Tim Hasselbeck, good stuff from him as always. Titans considering a Derrick Henry extension. Isn't that interesting after we've been talking about that this week?
Okay, I need to know more about when we hear this report of considering an extension. What does that mean?
It says, this is according to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN.com, that the team is open to doing another deal with the star running back, Derrick Henry. I guess he signed through 2023. Remember, he got a four-year, $50 million extension. And right before that, the franchise tag deadline. And it was just Jeremy Fowler putting out there on ESPN.com that the team is open, air quotes, to doing another deal with Derrick Henry.
Is that really a story? Like, open in what way?
Isn't it a story, though? I mean, we've just been talking about what is Derrick Henry moving forward and the curse of the 370. And we've been talking about it this week. That's why I thought it was very interesting that, oh, wow, this came out.
But that's a very non-specific thing. I'm trying to figure out what that could mean, okay? Because I don't.
Well, let me ask you something. How specific can you get with that topic?
Well, let's look at it. Basically, we have set the table for this. He is set to make, what, $15 million against the cap this coming season? If so, is the idea that you get that cap number down and push the pile back? That doesn't sound like a really smart thing from my perspective. I just don't think Derrick Henry is going to be your running back for the next 4 years. I think you're looking at this year, next year. And that's kind of what his contract is designed to do, right?
It's based on the curse of 370?
Or based on the workload of running backs his age. It's not a curse, really. It's just the statistical performance of running backs at his age as they get older. I just don't think you can look 4 years down the road. Unless it's advantageous to the team. Like, is there something that if you knocked his cap space down, what could you do with that money? Are there people on the market right now you could go get that could improve your team? A veteran wide receiver? Some other area that you think there are some guys out there? Then I guess in the short term that could help. But to me, unless that's the case, I think you're better off just biting the bullet. You've committed to him through the end of this year, and then you can sort of reevaluate at the end of it. Now, unless it's going to be, I've got a real unhappy Derrick Henry on my hands and he wants to hold out or something like that. Is that what we're getting at here? Like,
do you really think Derrick Henry's that type?
No, I don't.
He's the A.J. Brown type.
I don't. I think Derrick Henry is fortunate to be making. He's probably been underpaid he's been underpaid the last few years, but I think he's going to have a hard time. He's going to have a great year to justify being worth $15 million just because relative to other running backs, teams don't pay running backs.
Yeah, well, they're not Derrick Henry, though. Derrick Henry's elite.
They're
Derrick
not. Henry's Derrick
special.
Henry has been elite.
Derrick Henry's different. Well, we don't. Why would you do past tense when you don't know? You're assuming it's past tense. You're assuming that his better days are over.
Yes.
And now, better days as in, first of all, it's not fair to compare anybody to 2,000 yards. Is 1,400 yards this season a down year? Is he regressing?
Yes.
If he has 1,400 yards rushing?
Yes, I would take that and never complain. If he had that would be great.
Well, you just said yes, as in they believe he's regressing. He's on the back end?
Yes, and he's under contract for this year for $15 million. But why would you redo his deal before that? Where does that serve the Titans? Because then you're saying you're kind of giving him an extension. What's your goal in reworking the deal? What would be your goal for the Titans?
Okay, I'm going to give you some of that answer on the other side.
Okay, because I want to hear that. Like, I'm all ears. If you can it sounds like you're playing the long game when you're talking about an extension. You're pushing money back rather than trying to take what you hope will be the last prime year or two of his career.
Okay. I will tell you all that on the other side, because we'll discuss that a little bit further, because here's what the Titans have to be careful of on the other side. Here on the DDC, ESPN 102.5, The Game, and 106.3. You just made the list coming up at high noon. Looking forward to that. Have your displeasures ready, okay, to pass along. Who or what has made you mad? That's coming up at noon. So here's where they need to be really careful with this, Willie, because there is an element of what we've been talking about in the past. So they've just traded away their number one receiver, who was a fan favorite, that got a little wacky at the end and absolutely forced this trade. I'm just telling you. That's why I'm not going to hear about A.J. Brown being innocent in all this. I've talked to enough people. I've heard stuff that behind the scenes. He forced their hand. I mean, it came to the point where they didn't believe anymore that he wanted to be here. And there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes where John Robinson just had to say, look, I don't think we're going to be able to make this work. This has gone too far. And David Poyle is in those shoes right now. I don't believe it's the same negotiations, because Philip Forsberg hasn't acted like A.J. Brown. Or at least I certainly haven't heard of anything. We know it's not happening on social media. It may get to that here in the, you know, in less than 2 months, but A.J. Brown forced that, but he was a fan favorite. He did sell tickets. He was their number one receiver. He was a big part of what they were doing. So he's gone. Now Treylon Burks is in the mix, and we're about to find out what he's all about, right? And he could soon be a fan favorite as well. But you have to keep guys that sell tickets. And I mean, Derrick Henry is their most popular player. And, oh, by the way, Willie, he conducts his business in a professional manner.
He's awesome. He's the leader. He's the spiritual leader. He's the guy that makes the engine go. There's no question about that. But he's under contract. So why redo the contract?
Well, I mean, why did the Predators redo John Hines' contract?
They didn't redo it.
They added another year. Why? They had a year just to pick it up.
Why is that comparable? Do you have Derrick Henry?
Well, I'm saying you have a contract in place. All you have to do is pick up a year. Well, there's no need to do anything either. But they did. Like, we don't see things. We don't see being proactive with players and tearing things up and doing things differently.
Okay, I mean, that happens all the time. Make the argument for a running back in the NFL who is under contract. He's going to make $15 million against the cap this year. Next year, he's under contract. And he will make, again, 15.5 against the cap next year. So are you saying redo it and spread that money out over the next 3 years when he'll be over 30?
I think that anytime you're having a discussion like this and something like that is being put out there, they know, one, we've already talked about it, who's going to get the big payday this time next year?
Jeffrey Simmons.
Right? No one is going to push back on that, right? Like, they're not parting ways with Jeffrey Simmons unless for some reason this year he just turns to total crap, which, you know, that's not going to happen. So they're going to have to give him the big bucks. They know that. That's coming. We've talked about the guys that are going to command high dollar, and he's next, and he is going to get the big contract. So, of course, there's a business angle to this. But I also think there is a reward for this as well. When you say, hey, you know, he's been worth every penny. He's produced. He's the fan favorite. He sells tickets. And, oh, by the way, he goes about his business in a professional manner, which is, by the way, we talk about it all the time. You have to consider what a lot of people don't realize is things behind the scenes factor into this stuff.
I agree.
We've talked about Kevin Fiala. It's not just about Kevin Fiala on the ice. How many times do we have to bring it up? What goes on behind the scenes does matter.
Absolutely good point. Now, Did we not have a very, very painful discussion about Eddie George when that time came for him? Because everything you just said about Derrick Henry was true for Eddie George. The consummate pro, the leader, the engine that drives the team. And it got to that point with Eddie George where they had to address the contract. So, look, if it's a reworking of the deal to get the number down, I can see that. But also that day will come. Once a guy hits 30, I'm just telling you, the odds are overwhelmingly against wanting to have a lot of money invested in a 30, 31-year-old running back. So as it stands now, you got 2 years left on the deal at a very high number. So it's a very intriguing thing to me. What's the upside? Maybe the upside for Derrick Henry is I'd like to know from his angle, what's the upside for him? Is he getting more money up front in guarantees? What does it do to your salary cap next year and the year after? Mm-hmm. Because I think it's reasonable. He's going to decline. He's already, we've talked about some of these analytics sites that have cited, as great as he was before the injury last year, there were some signs of regression, even though he was still dominant.
It depends on what your definition of decline.
Well, I mean, we talked about one the other day. The percentage of the time that he breaks the tackle or makes people miss went down. Mm-hmm. There's a new article today on ESPN.com that talks about Derrick Henry's decline. And it's with Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara and some of the other running backs that still get the big money. Ezekiel Elliott is definitely in decline, right?
And Ezekiel Elliott was never, I in my opinion, in watching him his entire career in Dallas, has never been Derrick Henry. I'm sorry. I've never been as everybody else about Ezekiel Elliott.
Running backs we know generally decline as they get older.
Right, but I don't think it's fair to put him in the Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara because those two have always been hurt, basically. They're always hurt. Derrick Henry just got hurt for the first time. So don't know.
Look, we don't know, but how do you try as best you can without having a crystal ball and knowing how the future will come out? Nobody is all-knowing, but you look at the signs. So this is Bill Barnwell from ESPN. Rush yards over expectation. Down from 2019 and 2020. First down rate. Over expected. Success rate. You know, all of those, as even though he piled up a lot of yards and was awesome. I said he was the most valuable player in the league before he got hurt. But there were some signs of decline. Now, you can argue, look, based on what he was doing the couple years before that, there was nowhere to go but down. But relative to other backs in the league, I'm just pointing it out. I'm not rooting for this to happen. But I think you got to be careful on what is reasonable expectations for Derrick Henry the next 2 or 3 years, especially as it pertains to his contract.
It's hard for me to say he was on the – I don't care what Bill Barnwell or anybody puts out there, Pro Football Focus, any of them, that he was on the decline – when it looked like he was set to go where no player in NFL history, which is over 100 years of running backs, has ever gone. If he stays upright and healthy last year, he's going to 2,000 yards in back-to-back seasons. It's never been done in a pass-happy offense. This is about throwing it in an era where it's all about throwing. And he was going to go back-to-back.
It's phenomenal.
Where no running back has ever gone in over 100
years. He was doing it in a less efficient way. His yards per carry went from over 5 yards per carry to 4.3, which is still really good. And he had dominant games, but it wasn't as easy. It wasn't as efficient as it was. Is he going to bounce back? I don't think so. Or can he maintain what he was last year? I would take that because that would be a really good year. You threw out 1,400 yards, 1,500. That would be awesome. if he just did that. But he's still not going to – he's not likely to bounce back and be better. You're hoping he stays in the ballpark. And there was decline last year.
To me, the telltale sign that he is never going to be the same is if he starts having 1,000 to, you know, anywhere from 1,000 to 1,100 yard rushing seasons. That's when you can
on how many carries. That's the other part of it.
It doesn't matter if that's what. Well, that's all part of it. Well, no, that's all part of it. I mean, to do that, that means the workload has lessened tremendously. It's not going to be on the same workload. I mean, we could all watch that. I mean, if he's having the same workload and finishes with 1,068 yards, you know, we'll be talking about, like, is he done? Not is he declining?
Yes,
they'll be like,
and that
is he done?
That has happened to running backs. It may not happen to Derrick Henry, but it's happened to a lot of running backs. A lot.
Yes, right. Running backs that aren't elite and special.
But you wouldn't
Derrick
have said
Henry
that about Larry Johnson
and
Sean Alexander. There's some great names that were the absolute cream of the crop that hit the wall. In different ways.
Are those guys in the Hall of Fame?
No, they don't. I mean, they generally are not, but it happened to Eddie George.
Did. Remember it well. All right, we'll come back. By the way, there's a interesting text that I need us to think about during the break, and let's come back and discuss it. It says, hockey players are a different breed. Name one hockey player that talks through social media like A.J. Brown and other football players. I need a couple minutes to think about that, because at first glance I'm like, Neil may be right, but there's got to be examples. But let's talk about that on the other side, and we'll continue the discussion as well. Don't forget, you just made the list coming up at high noon. Back to wrap up the second hour next. Better make sure that unit is working this weekend. It's going to be hot. Hot, hot, hot. What do you think about Neil on our text line? Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Hockey players are a different breed. Name me one hockey player that talks through social media like A.J. Brown and other football players. Max and I were talking during the break. Like, P.K. Subban has obviously been active on social media, but he's not controversial, right? Paul Bissonnette, again, you know, built a name through social media, but I guess he was, I don't know if it's controversial, but he certainly was out there and unfiltered.
He was also much closer to, like, Twitter's creation. Like, he was the first athlete, period, I remember having a personality on Twitter. Maybe I'm wrong, but, like, this was in, like, 2009, 2010.
Yeah, the early days of Twitter, you're saying. He was on the ride early.
And he was not a prominent player ever, as he jokes about.
A popular player, but in a certain role.
The reason TNT works so well with him is because they have the best player in the history of the sport, Wayne Gretzky, sitting next to the worst player in the history of the sport, Paul Bissonnette. And there's no one else in any other sport who would admit that they're the worst player.
But, you know, now that he – at first I was like, oh, wait a minute. And then I was like, okay, I don't really – I don't pretend to follow. But we would know, right, if there were outlandish social media accounts with NHL players.
Look, I am probably not the person to ask, because I don't care what sport it is. I don't generally follow a lot of – current athletes.
You would know if something, like, you're not following A.J. Brown, but you started to see and hear all the stuff that he was doing. But
right.
If it doesn't come to your attention.
It filters its way back to us.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Even if you don't directly follow them. I get that. It's a really good question. I think, generally speaking, there are probably tend to be less hockey players than some other sports. But I'm sure there are some.
I'd say the NBA is probably the worst, right? Like, they, like Kevin, you know,
the worst
Kevin
or the
Durant
best
is, well,
because it's a
double-edged
sword.
That's true. That's a good point.
There are some good things about bringing the attention.
They're very active.
Yeah,
they're very.
Some people
active.
Think hockey players need to do more of it.
Yeah,
to help their sport. Same thing with baseball, football. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. You get a lot
fair.
Of headache, but there's an upside to sort of like I've been to the broadcast meetings where there is a plea from the league to the teams and to the players to show more of your personality. And that's one way you can do it on social media. But then you got to deal with all the goofballs that attack you and put stuff on your timeline that you don't like. And you got to be able to blow that off somehow, which some people can do easier than others.
Yep. I think, Darren, the Predators may be ahead of the pack in this because the oldest player on the team is 32. I don't know where the average age ranks, but they may have the youngest elder statesman in the league of anybody, Willie, you think? Mark Borowiecki is the oldest player on the team, and he's 32. But it's a pretty young team, a lot of guys with young families, and because of that, the majority of them have active Instagrams of this year's Preds players.
Yes.
Like, they are putting stuff up. They are sharing things from the team.
It's just
a different app, yeah.
Yeah, it's their dog or their kid or their what, yeah.
But that's what the league wants. I mean, like, Nick Cousins is out there chirping guys in the comments. Like, he's chirping, I mean, as he's supposed to do. He's chirping the hell out of his teammates. So,
but they don't have somebody that filters, whose stuff filters around the league and creates a big thing. Paul Bissonnette's an interesting example. P.K. Subban certainly had a massive following. It's not as big as it was, but he's certainly a guy that has benefited and raised his profile through social media. Fair?
Yes, but again, we're talking about A.J. Brown was getting the attention, Antonio Brown, other NFL players that get attention for the other reasons, right? Being, you know, outspoken about
things. How you use it. How you use it is very important and very different depending on the player. You can get a lot of attention and build a big following without living your life out loud, right? Tweeting and then saying, "Well, whoops, I'm taking that down." You know, there's people who are very calculated about it and build a brand with a lot of thought put into it. And then there's people that just are regular people who happen to be famous people that do what a lot of people do and probably put some things out on social media that they regret putting out. But there's more consequences.
One of my theories would be that, you know, football players, a lot of times when they get mad is because they don't have the guaranteed contracts, and so they're trying to push the needle, push the envelope, get someone's attention, right, whether it's a front office or whatever. And so that may play a factor in it, where all the other sports do have the guaranteed contracts, right? They get the deal and they're locked in. Football players don't, so maybe that's why they get a little bit more, you know, outlandish, or they get mad and they go to social media because they're trying to get somebody's attention. They don't have the guaranteed contracts. I don't know. I mean, I will agree overall, just because I've covered hockey players for a long time and football players for a long time with Neil. Yes, hockey players are different. They are definitely different. I mean, the majority of
them. They're conditioned differently.
They are
as they come up
really
through the ranks, it's just a
they're just a different type of person, yes. And it's, you know, that's not saying anything bad about football players. I've, you know, met some incredible, incredible people that are NFL players and incredible people who are hockey players. And hockey players, they've got – everybody's got, you know, they're not all choir boys. They're not all – but they are different as a whole. I would definitely agree with that. They are different.
Well, when people are asking, what do you mean? Well – There is just a culture within the game that suggests you do not call attention to yourself. And so if somebody wants to break the mold, there's going to be a lot of people, you know, turning a big eyebrow towards you.
Which
you
know, is what is happens with P.K. Subban. Like, people do, because of the culture, again, they do roll their eyes.
Well, Trevor Zegras, right? There was that big thing with the Ducks at the end of the season, right, where they poked the bear a little bit. They were winning big, and then Arizona, some of the old school guys took issue, and they beat the crap out of those guys.
Yep.
I mean, injured a guy. They beat him to, you know, that's literally what happens in hockey. If you show off too much, you will get beat up. I'm not talking about, hey, in the, you know, on social media. I'm talking about literally getting beat up on the ice. Mm-hmm. That's the old school culture, that they're trying to break the mold a little bit, and they're evolving and have been evolving for a long time, but that's how the game was known for a long time, for decades. You don't call attention to yourself or there will be consequences.
All right, we'll come back third hour. We begin with you just made the list. Who or what has made you mad? That's next.